Tango Kawana's name and address have to be on their checklist. I doubt they know yet about the personal connection between you and Tango. But when they search for the reason Bobblehead was in that apartment, Tango's name will surface. It's only a matter of time. If we're lucky, it might be sometime before they discover it. They might not make the connection between Bobblehead's death and Tango right away. If we're lucky, Tamaru said. If they're not as meticulous as I think they are. But I never count on luck. That's how I've survived all these years. So I shouldn't go near that apartment building. Correct, Tamaru said. We made a narrow escape, and we can't be too careful. I wonder if Bobblehead figured out that I'm hiding in this apartment. If he had, right now you would be somewhere I couldn't get to. But he came so close. He did. But that was just coincidence, nothing more. That's why he could sit there on the slide totally exposed. Right, Tamaru said. He had no idea that you were watching him. He never expected it. And that was his fatal mistake. I said that, didn't I? That there is a very fine line between life and death. A few seconds of silence descended on them. A heavy silence that a person's, any person's, death brings on. Bobblehead might be gone, but the cult is still after me. I'm not so sure about that, Tamaru said. At first they wanted to grab you and find out what organization planned Leader's murder. They know you couldn't have done it on your own. It was obvious that you must have had backup. If they had caught you, you would have been in for some tough questioning. Which is why I needed a pistol, Almama said. Bobblehead was well aware of all this, Tamaru went on. He knew the cult was after you to grill you and punish you. But somehow the situation has drastically shifted. After Bobblehead left the stage, I spoke with one of the cult members. He said they have no plans to do you any harm. He asked me to give you this message. It could be a trap, but it sounded genuine to me. The guy explained that Leader was actually hoping to die, that it was a kind of self-destruction. So there's no need anymore to punish you. He's right, Almama said in a dry tone. Leader knew from the outset that I had gone there to kill him, and he wanted me to kill him. His security detail hadn't seen through you, but Leader had. That's right. I don't know why, but he knew everything beforehand, Almama said. He was waiting for me there. Tamaru paused briefly and then said, What happened? We made a deal. This is the first I've heard of it, Tamaru said, his voice stiff. I never had the opportunity to tell you. Tell me what sort of deal you made. I massaged his muscles for a good hour, and all the while he talked. He knew about Tango, and somehow he knew about the connection between Tango and me. He told me he wanted me to kill him. He wanted to escape the terrible physical pain he was in as soon as possible. If I would give him death, he said, he would spare Tango's life for me. So I made up my mind and took his life. Even if I hadn't carried it out, he already had one foot in the grave, and when I considered the kinds of things he had done, I almost felt like letting him stay as he was, in such agony. You never reported to Madame about this deal you made. I went there to kill Leader, and I carried out my assignment, Almama said. The issue with Tango was private. All right, Tamaru said, sounding half resigned. You most definitely did carry out your assignment. I'll give you that. And the issue of Tango Kawana is indeed a private matter. but somewhere either before or after this, you became pregnant. That's not something that can be easily overlooked. Not before or after. I got pregnant on that very night. The night of the huge rainstorm and terrible lightning that hit the city. On the same exact night when I dealt with Leader. As I said before, without any sex involved. Tamaru sighed.
Considering what we're talking about, I either have to believe you or not believe you. One or the other. I have always found you to be a trustworthy person. And I want to believe you, but I can't fathom the logic. Understand, I am a person who can only follow deductive reasoning.
Almame was silent. Tamaru went on.
Is there a cause and effect relationship between Leader's murder and this mysterious pregnancy?
I really can't say.
Is it possible that the fetus inside you is Leader's child? That he used some method? What that would be, I have no idea, and impregnated you? If that's true, then I understand why they're trying to get a hold of you. They need a successor to Leader.
Almame clutched the phone tight and shook her head. That's impossible. This is Tengo's child. I know it for a fact.
That's another thing I have to either trust you on or not.
Beyond that, I can't explain anything. Tamaru sighed again.
All right. For the time being, I'll accept what you're saying. That this baby is yours and Tengo's, and that you know this for a fact. Still, I don't see how it makes sense. At first, they wanted to capture you and punish you severely. But at a certain point, something happened. Or they found out something. Now they need you. They said they guarantee your safety and that they have something to offer you. And they want to meet directly to discuss this. What could have happened to account for this sudden turnaround?
They don't need me, Almame said. They need what's inside my belly. Somewhere along the line they realize this.
Ho, ho!
One of the little people intoned from somewhere.
Things are moving a bit too fast for me,
Tamaru said. He gave a little groan again in the back of his throat.
I still don't see the logical connection here.
Well, nothing's been logical since the two moons appeared, Almame thought. That's what stole the logic from everything. Not that she said this aloud.
Ho, ho!
Six other little people joined in.
They need someone to hear the voice, Tamaru said. The man I talked with on the phone was insistent about that. If they lose the voice, it could be the end of the religion. What hearing the voice actually means, I have no idea. But that's what the man said. Does this mean that the child inside you is the one who hears the voice?
Almame laid a gentle hand on her abdomen. Maza and Dota, she thought to herself. The moons can't hear about this. I'm not really sure, Almame said, carefully choosing her words. But I can't think of any other reason they would need me.
But why would this child have that kind of special power?
I don't know. In exchange for his life, maybe Leader entrusted his successor to me, she thought. In order to accomplish that, on that stormy night, he might have temporarily opened the circuits where worlds intersect and joined Tengo and me as one.
Tamaru went on. No matter who the father of that child is, or whatever abilities that child may or may not have when it's born, you have no intention of negotiating with the cult, correct? You don't care what they give you in exchange, even if they solve all the riddles you've been wondering about.
I'll never do it, Our mama said. Despite your intentions, they may take what they want by force. By any means necessary, Tamaru said. Plus, you have a weak spot. Tengo Kawana. Perhaps the only weak spot you have, but it's a big one. When they discover that, that's where they'll focus their attack.
Tamaru was right. Tengo was both her reason for living and her Achilles heel. Tamaru went on.
It's too dangerous for you to stay there any longer. You need to move to a more secure location before they figure out the connection between you and Tengo.
There are no more secure places in this world, our mama said. Tamaru mulled over her opinion.
Tell me what you're thinking,
he said quietly. First, I have to see Tengo. Until that happens, I can't leave here, no matter how dangerous it might be.
What are you going to do when you see him?
I know what I need to do. Tamaru was silent for a moment.
You're crystal clear on that?
I don't know if it will work out, but I know what I have to do. I'm crystal clear on that, yes.
But you're not planning on telling me what it involves.
I'm sorry, but I can't. Not just you, but anybody. If I told anyone about it, at that instant it would be disclosed to the whole world. The moons were listening carefully. So were the little people.
And this very room she was in.
She couldn't let it out of her heart, not one centimeter. She had to surround her heart with a thick wall so nothing could escape. On the other end of the line, Tamaru was tapping the tip of a ballpoint pen on a desk. Our mama could hear the dry, rhythmic noise. It was a lonely sound, lacking any resonance.
Okay, then let's get in touch with Tengo Kawana. Before that, though, Madame must agree to it. The task I've been given is to move you as soon as possible to another location. But you said you can't leave there until you see Tengo. It doesn't look like it will be easy to explain the reason to her. You understand that, right?
It's very difficult to logically explain the illogical.
Exactly. As difficult as finding a real pearl in a Roppongi oyster bar. But I'll do my best.
Thank you, our mama said.
What you're insisting on doesn't make sense to me, no matter how I look at it. Still, the more I talk with you, the more I feel that maybe I can accept it. I wonder why.
Our mama kept silent.
Madame trusts you and believes in you,
Tamaru said.
So if you insist on it that much, I can't see her finding a reason not to let you see Tengo. You and Tengo seem to have an unwavering connection to each other.
More than anything in the world, our mama said. More than anything in any world, she repeated to herself.
Even if I say it's too dangerous and refuse to contact Tengo, you'll still go to that apartment to see him.
I'm sure I will.
And no one can stop you.
It's pointless to try. Tamaru paused for a moment.
What message would you like me to give, Tengo?
Come to the slide after dark. After it gets dark, any time is fine. I will be waiting. If you tell him all Mama said this, he'll understand.
Okay. I'll let him know. Come to the slide after dark.
If he has something important he doesn't want to leave behind, tell him to bring it with him. But tell him he has to be able to keep both hands free.
Where are you going to take that luggage?
Far away, our mama said.
How far away?
I don't know, our mama said. All right. As long as Madame gives her permission, I'll let Tengo know. And I will do my best to keep you safe. But there's still danger here. We're dealing with desperate men. You need to protect yourself.
I understand. All Mama said quietly. Her palm still lay softly on her abdomen. Not just myself, she thought. After she hung up, she collapsed onto the sofa. She closed her eyes and thought about Tengo. She couldn't think of anything else. Her chest felt tight, and it hurt. But it was a good sort of pain. It was the kind of pain she could put up with. Tengo was so close, almost within reach. Less than a 10-minute walk away. The very thought warmed her to her core. Tengo is a bachelor and teaches math at a cram school. He lives in a neat, humble little apartment. He cooks, irons, and is writing a long novel. Ah, Mama envied Tamaru. If it were possible, she would like to get into Tengo's apartment like that when he was out. Tengo's Tengo-less apartment. In the deserted silence, she wanted to touch each and every object there. Check out how sharp his pencils were. Hold his coffee cup, inhale the odor of his clothes. She wanted to take that step first, before actually coming face to face with him. Without that prefatory knowledge, if they were suddenly together, just the two of them, she couldn't imagine what she would say. The thought made it hard to breathe and her mind went blank. There were too many things. Still, when it came down to it, perhaps nothing needed to be said. The things she most wanted to tell him would lose their meaning the moment she put them into words. All she could do now was simply wait, calmly, with eyes wide open. She prepared a bag so she could run outside as soon as she spotted Tengo. She stuffed an oversized black leather shoulder bag with everything she would need so she wouldn't have to come back here. There weren't all that many things. Some cash, a few changes of clothes, and the Heckler and Coke fully loaded. That was about it. She put the bag where she could get to it at a moment's notice. She took her Junko Shimada suit from the hanger in the closet and, after checking that it wasn't wrinkled, hung it on the wall in the living room. She also took out the white blouse that went with the suit, stockings, and her Charles Jourdan high heels, and the beige spring coat. The same outfit she was wearing when she climbed down the emergency stairway on the Metropolitan Expressway number 3. The coat was a bit thin for a December evening, but she had no other choice. After getting all this ready, she sat in the garden chair on the balcony and looked out through the slit in the screen at the slide in the park. Tengo's father died late Sunday night. A minimum of 24 hours had to elapse between the time a person died and the time they could be cremated. She was sure there was a law that said that. Tuesday would be the earliest they could do the cremation. Today was Tuesday. The earliest Tengo would be back in Tokyo from wherever after the funeral would be this evening. And then Tamaru could give him the message. So Tengo wouldn't be coming to the park any time before that. Plus, it was still light out. On his death, leader set this little one inside my womb, she thought. That's my working supposition. Or maybe I should say intuition. Does this mean I'm being manipulated by the will he left behind? Being led to a destination that he established? Almame grimaced. I can't decide anything. Tamaru surmised that I got pregnant with the one who hears the voice as a result of leader's plan. Probably as an air chrysalis. But why does it have to be me? And why does my partner have to be Tengo? This was another thing she couldn't explain. Be that as it may, Things are moving forward around me, even though I can't figure out the connections or sort out the principles at work behind them or see where things are headed. I've just wound up entangled in it all. Until now, that is, she told herself. Her lips twisted and she grimaced even more. From now on, things will be different. Nobody else's will is going to control me anymore. From now on, I'm going to do things based on one principle alone. My own will. I'm going to protect this little one, whatever it takes. This is my life and my child. Somebody else may have programmed it for their own purposes, but there's no doubt in my mind that this is Tengo's and my child. I'll never hand it over to anyone else. Never. From here on out, I'm the one in charge. I'm the one who decides what's good and what's bad, and which way we're headed. And people had better remember that. The phone rang the next day, Wednesday, at 2 p.m.
I gave him the message,
Tamaru said, as usual omitting any greeting.
He's in his apartment now. I talked to him this morning on the phone. He will be at the slide tonight at precisely 7.
Did he remember me?
He remembered you well. He seems to have been searching all over for you.
It was just as Leader said. Tengo is looking for me. That's all I need to know.
Almama's heart was filled with an indescribable joy. No other words in the world had any meaning for her.
He will be bringing something important with him then, as you asked. I'm guessing that this will include the novel he's writing.
I'm sure of it, Almama said.
I checked around that humble building he lives in. All looks clear to me. No suspicious characters hanging around. Bobblehead's apartment is deserted. Everything's quiet, but not too quiet. Those guys took care of the article during the night and left. They probably thought it wouldn't be good to stay too long. I made sure of this, so I don't think I overlooked anything.
Good.
Probably, though, is the operative word here. At least for now. The situation is changing by the moment, and obviously I'm not perfect. I might be overlooking something important. It is possible that those guys might turn out to be one notch ahead of me.
Which is why it all comes down to me needing to protect myself.
As I said.
Thank you for everything. I'm very grateful to you.
I don't know what you plan to do from now on,
Tamaru said.
But if you do go somewhere far away, and I never see you again, I know I'll feel a little sad. You're a rare sort of character. A type I've seldom come across before.
Almama smiled into the phone. That's pretty much the impression I wanted to leave you with.
Madame needs you. Not for the work you do, but on a personal level, as a companion. So I know she feels quite sad that she has to say goodbye like this. She can't come to the phone now. I hope you'll understand.
I do, Almama said. I might have trouble too if I had to talk with her.
You said you're going far away,
Tamaru said.
How far are we talking about?
It's a distance that can't be measured.
Like the distance that separates one person's heart from another's.
Almama closed her eyes and took a deep breath. She was on the verge of tears, but was able to hold it together.
I'm praying that everything will go well,
Tamaru said quietly. I'm sorry, but I may have to hold on to the Heckler and Coke, Almama said.
That's fine. It's my gift to you. If it gets troublesome to have, just toss it into Tokyo Bay,
the world will take one step closer to disarmament. I might end up never firing the pistol, contrary to Chekhov's principle.
That's fine too, Tamaru said. Nothing could be better than not firing it.
We're drawing close to the end of the 20th century. Things are different from back in Chekhov's time. No more horse-drawn carriages, no more women in corsets. Somehow the world survived the Nazis, the atomic bomb, and modern music. Even the way novels are composed has changed drastically. So it's nothing to worry about. But I do have a question. You and Tango are going to meet on the slide tonight at 7.
If things work out, Ah Mama said.
If you do see him there, what are you going to do there?
We're going to look at the moon.
Very romantic, Tamaru said gently.
Chapter 27. Tengo. The whole world may not be enough. On Wednesday morning, when the phone rang, Tengo was still asleep. He hadn't been able to fall asleep until nearly dawn, and the whiskey he had drunk still remained in him. He got out of bed and was surprised to see how light it was outside. "Tengo Kawana," a man said. It was a voice he had never heard before. "Yes," Tengo replied. The man's voice was quiet and businesslike, and he was sure it must be more paperwork regarding his father's death. But his alarm clock showed it was just before 8 a.m., not the time that a city office or funeral home would be calling. "I am sorry to be calling so early, but I was rather in a hurry." "Something urgent." "What is it?" Tengo's brain was still fuzzy. "Do you recall the name Aomami?" the man asked. "Aomami?" His hangover and sleepiness vanished. His mind reset quickly, like after a short blackout in a stage play. Tengo re-gripped the receiver. "Yes, I do," he replied. "It's quite an unusual name." "We were in the same class in elementary school," Tengo said, somehow able to get his voice back to normal. The man paused. "Mr. Kawana, do you have interest at this moment in talking about Aomami?" Tengo found the man's way of speaking odd. His diction was unique, like listening to lines from an avant-garde translated play. "If you do not have any interest, then it will be a waste of time for both of us. I'll end this conversation right away." "I am interested," Tengo said hurriedly. "Sorry, but what is your connection here?" "I have a message from her," the man said, ignoring his question. "Aomami is hoping to see you. What about you, Mr. Kawana? Would you care to see her as well?"
"I would," Tengo said. He coughed and cleared his throat. "I've been wanting to see her for a long time."
"Fine. She wants to see you. And you are hoping to see her." Tengo suddenly realized how cold the room was. He grabbed a nearby cardigan and threw it over his pajamas.
"So what should I do?" Tengo asked.
"Can you come to the slide after dark?" the man said.
"The slide?" Tengo asked. What was this guy talking about?
"She said if I told you that, you would understand. She would like you to come to the top of the slide. I'm merely telling you what Aomami said." Tengo's hand went to his hair, which was a mass of cowlicks and knots after sleeping. "The slide. Where I saw the two moons. It's got to be that slide."
"I think I understand," he replied, his voice dry.
"Fine. Also, if there is something valuable you would like to take with you, make sure you have it on you, so you're all set to move on, far away."
"Something valuable I would like to take with me," Tengo repeated in surprise.
"Something you don't want to leave behind." Tengo pondered this.
"I'm not sure I totally understand, but by moving on far away, do you mean never coming back here?"
"I wouldn't know," the man said. "As I said previously, I am merely transmitting her message." Tengo ran his fingers through his tangled hair and considered this.
Move on. "I might have a fair amount of papers I would want to bring."
"That shouldn't be a problem," the man said. "You are free to choose whatever you like.
However, when it comes to luggage, I have been asked to tell you that you should be able to keep both hands free.
Keep both hands free, Tengo repeated. So a suitcase wouldn't work, would it?
I wouldn't think so.
From the man's voice, it was hard to guess his age, looks, or build. It was the sort of voice that provided no tangible clues. Tengo felt he wouldn't remember the voice at all as soon as the man hung up. Individuality or emotions, assuming there were any to begin with, were hidden deep down, out of sight.
That's all I need to relay, the man said.
Is Aomami well? Tengo asked.
Physically, she's fine, the man said, choosing his words carefully. Though right now she's caught in a somewhat tense situation. She has to watch her every move. One false step and it might all be over.
All be over, Tengo repeated mechanically.
It would be best not to be too late, the man said. Time has become an important factor.
Time has become an important factor, Tengo repeated to himself. Was there an issue with this man's choice of words, or am I too much on edge?
I think I can be at the slide at 7 tonight, Tengo said. If for some reason I'm not able to come tonight, I'll be there tomorrow at the same time.
Understood.
And you know which slide we're talking about?
I think so. Tengo glanced at the clock. He had 11 hours to go.
By the way, I heard that your father passed away on Sunday. My deepest condolences.
Tengo instinctively thanked him, but then wondered how this man could possibly know about his father.
Could you tell me a little more about Aomami? Tengo said. For instance, where she is and what she does.
She's single. She works as a fitness instructor at a sports club in Hiru. She's a first-rate instructor, but circumstances have changed and she has taken leave from her job. And by sheer coincidence, she has been living not far from you. For anything beyond that, I think it best you hear directly from her.
Even what sort of tense situation she's in right now.
The man didn't respond. Either he didn't want to answer or he felt there was no need. For whatever reason, people like this seem to flock to Tengo.
Today at 7 p.m., then, on top of the slide, the man said.
Just a second, Tengo said quickly. I have a question. I was warned by someone that I was being watched and that I should be careful. Excuse me for asking, but did they mean you?
No, they didn't mean me, the man said immediately. It was probably someone else who was watching you, but it is a good idea to be cautious, as that person pointed out.
Does my being under surveillance have something to do with Aomami's unusual situation?
Somewhat tense situation, the man said, correcting him. Yes, most likely there is some sort of connection.
Is this dangerous?
The man paused and chose his words carefully, as if separating out varieties of beans from a pile.
If you call not being able to see Aomami anymore something dangerous, then yes, there is definitely danger involved.
Tengo mentally rearranged this man's roundabout phrasing into something he could understand. He didn't have a clue about the background or the circumstances, but it was obvious that things were indeed fraught.
If things don't go well, we might not be able to see each other ever again.
Exactly.
I understand.
I'll be careful, Tengo said.
I'm sorry to have called so early. It would appear that I woke you up.
Without pausing, the man hung up.
Tengo gazed at the black receiver in his hand. As he had predicted, as soon as they hung up, the man's voice had vanished from his memory.
Tengo looked at the clock again.
8:10. How should I kill all this time between now and 7 p.m., he wondered.
He started by taking a shower, washing his hair, and untangling it as best he could. Then he stood in front of the mirror and shaved, brushed his teeth, and flossed. He drank some tomato juice from the fridge, boiled water, ground coffee beans, and made coffee. Toasted a slice of bread. He set the timer and cooked a soft-boiled egg. He concentrated on each action, taking more time than usual. But still, it was only 9:30.
Tonight I will see Aomami on top of the slide.
The thought sent his senses spinning. His hands and legs and face all wanted to go in different directions, and he couldn't gather his emotions in one place. Whatever he tried to do,
His concentration was shot. He couldn't read, couldn't write. He couldn't sit still in one place. The only thing he seemed capable of was washing the dishes, doing the laundry, straightening up his drawers, making his bed. Every 5 minutes he would stop whatever he was doing and glance at the clock. Thinking about time only seemed to slow it down. Oh, Mommy knows. He was standing at the sink, sharpening a cleaver that really didn't need to be sharpened. She knows I've been to the slide in that playground a number of times. She must have seen me sitting there, staring up at the sky. Otherwise it makes no sense. He pictured what he looked like on top of the slide, lit up by the mercury vapor lamp. He had had no sense of being observed. Where had she been watching him from? It doesn't matter, Tengo thought. No big deal. No matter where she saw me from, she recognized me. The thought filled him with joy. Just as I've been thinking of her, she's been thinking of me. Tengo could hardly believe it, that in this frantic, labyrinth-like world, two people's hearts, a boy's and a girl's, could be connected, unchanged, even though they hadn't seen each other for 20 years. But why didn't Ao Mami call out to me then when she saw me? Things would be so much simpler if she had. And how did she know where I live? How did she, or that man, find out my phone number? He didn't like to get calls and had an unlisted number. You couldn't get it even if you called the operator. There was a lot that remained unknown and mysterious, and the lines that constructed this story were complicated. Which lines connected to which others, and what sort of cause-and-effect relationship existed, was beyond him. Still, ever since Fuka'eri showed up in his life, he felt he had been living in a place where questions outnumbered answers. But he had a faint sense that this chaos was, ever so slowly, heading toward a denouement. At 7 this evening, though, at least some questions will be cleared up, Tengo thought. We'll meet on the top of the slide. Not as a helpless 10-year-old boy and girl, but as an independent, grown-up man and woman. As a math teacher in a cram school and a sports club instructor. What will we talk about then? I have no idea. But we will talk. We need to fill in the blanks between us, exchange information about each other. And, to borrow the phrasing of the man who called, we might then move on somewhere. So I need to make sure to bring what's important to me, what I don't want to leave behind, and pack it away so that I can have both hands free. I have no regrets about leaving here. I lived here for 7 years, taught 3 days a week at the cram school, but never once felt it was home. Like a floating island bobbing along in the flow, it was just a temporary place to rest, and nothing more. My girlfriend is no longer here. Fuka'eri, too, who shared the place briefly. Gone. Tengo had no idea where these two women were now, or what they were doing. They had simply and quietly vanished from his life. If he left the cram school, someone else would surely take over. The world would keep on turning, even without him. If Ao Mami wanted to move on somewhere, with him, there was nothing to keep him from going. What could be the important thing he should take with him? 50,000 yen in cash and a plastic debit card. That was the extent of the assets he had at hand. There was also 1,000,000 yen in a savings account. No, there was more. His share of the royalties from Air Chrysalis was in the account as well. He had been meaning to return it to Komatsu, but hadn't gotten around to it. Then there was the printout of the novel he had begun. He couldn't leave that behind. It had no real value to anyone else, but to Tengo it was precious. He put the manuscript in a paper bag, then stuffed it into the hard, russet nylon shoulder bag he used when he went to the cram school. The bag was really heavy now. He crammed floppy disks into the pocket of his leather jacket. He couldn't very well take his word processor along with him, but he did add his notebooks and fountain pen to his luggage. What else? He wondered. He remembered the envelope the lawyer had given him in Chikura. Inside were his father's savings book and seal, a copy of their family record, and the mysterious family photo, if indeed that was what it was. It was probably best to take that with him. His elementary school report cards and the NHK commendations he would leave behind. He decided against taking a change of clothes or toiletries. They wouldn't fit in the now bulging bag, and besides, he could buy them as needed. Once he had packed everything in the bag, he had nothing left to do. There were no dishes to wash, no shirts left to iron. He looked at the wall clock again. 10:30. He thought he should call his friend to take over his classes at the cram school, but then remembered that his friend was always in a terrible mood if you phoned before noon. Tengo lay down on his bed, fully clothed, and let his mind wander through various possibilities. The last time he saw Aomami was when he was 10. Now they were both 30. They had both gone through a lot of experiences in the interim. Good things, things that weren't so good, probably slightly more of the latter. Our looks, our personalities, the environment where we live have all gone through changes, he thought. We're no longer a young boy and a young girl. Is the Aomami over there really the Aomami he had been searching for? And was he the Tengo Kawana she had been looking for? Tengo pictured them on the slide tonight, looking at each other, disappointed at what they saw. Maybe they wouldn't find anything to talk about. That was a real possibility. Actually, it would be kind of strange if it didn't turn out that way. Maybe we shouldn't meet again. Tengo stared up at the ceiling. Wasn't it better if they kept this desire to see each other hidden within them and never actually got together? That way, there would always be hope in their hearts. That hope would be a small yet vital flame that warmed them to their core, a tiny flame to cup one's hands around and protect from the wind, a flame that the violent winds of reality might easily extinguish. Tengo stared at the ceiling for a good hour, two conflicting emotions surging through him. More than anything, he wanted to meet Aomami. At the same time, he was afraid to see her. The cold disappointment and uncomfortable silence that might ensue made him shudder. His body felt like it was going to be torn in half. But he had to see her. This was what he had been wanting, what he had been hoping for with all his might for the last 20 years. No matter what disappointment might come of it, he knew he couldn't just turn his back on it and run away. Tired of staring at the ceiling, he fell asleep on the bed, still lying face up. A quiet, dreamless sleep of some 40 or 45 minutes, the deep, satisfying sleep you get after concentrating hard, after mental exhaustion. He realized that for the last few days he had only slept in fits and starts and hadn't gotten a good night's sleep. Before it got dark, he needed to rid himself of the fatigue that had built up. He had to be rested and relaxed when he left here and headed for the playground. He knew this instinctively. As he was falling asleep, he heard Kumi Adachi's voice, or felt like he heard it. When morning comes, you'll be leaving here, Tengo, before the exit is blocked. This was Kumi's voice, and at the same time it was the voice of the owl at night. In his memory, the voices were mixed and hard to distinguish from each other. What Tengo needed then more than anything was wisdom, the wisdom of the night that had put down roots into the soil, a wisdom that might only be found in the depths of sleep. At 6:30, Tengo slung his bag diagonally across his shoulders and left his apartment. He had on the same clothes as the last time he went to the slide, gray windbreaker and old leather jacket, jeans, and brown work boots. All of them worn, but they fit well, like an extension of his body. I probably won't ever be back here again, he thought. As a precaution, he took the typed cards with his name on them out of the door slot and the mailbox. What would happen to everything else? He decided not to worry about it for now. As he stood at the entrance of the apartment building, he peered around cautiously. If he believed Fukairi, he was being watched. But just as before, there was no sign of surveillance. Everything was the same as always. Now that the sun had set, the road in front of him was deserted. He set off for the station at a slow pace. He glanced back from time to time to make sure he wasn't being followed. He turned down several narrow streets he didn't need to take, then came to a stop and checked again to see if anyone was tailing him. You have to be careful, the man on the phone had cautioned, for yourself and for Aomami, who's in a tense situation. But does the man on the phone really know Aomami? Tengo suddenly wondered. Couldn't this be some kind of clever trap? Once this thought took hold, he couldn't shake off a sense of unease. If this really was a trap, then Sakigake had to be behind it. As the ghost writer of Air Chrysalis, he was probably, no, make that definitely, on their blacklist. Which is why that weird guy, Ushikawa, came to him with that suspicious story about a grant. On top of that, Tengo had let Fukaeri hide out in his apartment for 3 months. There were more than enough reasons for the cult to be upset with him. Be that as it may, Tengo thought, inclining his head, why would they go to the trouble of using Aomame as bait to lure me into a trap? They already know where I am. It's not like I'm running away and hiding. If they have some business with me, they should approach me directly. There's no need to lure me out to that slide in the playground. Things would be different if the opposite were true, if they were using me as bait to get Aomame. But why lure her out? He couldn't understand it. Was there, by chance, some connection between Aomame and Sakigake? Tengo's deductive reasoning hit a dead end. The only thing he could do was to ask Aomame herself, assuming he could meet her. At any rate, as the man on the phone said, he would have to be cautious. Tengo scrupulously took a roundabout route and made sure no one was following him. Once certain of that, he hurried off in the direction of the playground. He arrived at the playground at 7 minutes to 7. It was dark out already, and the mercury vapor lamp shone its even, artificial illumination into every nook and cranny of the tiny park. The afternoon had been lovely and warm, but now that the sun had set, the temperature had dropped sharply, and a cold wind was blowing. The pleasant Indian summer weather they had had for a few days had vanished, and real winter, cold and severe, had settled in for the duration. The tips of the Zelkova tree's branches trembled like the fingers of some ancient person shaking out a warning with a desiccated, raspy sound. Lights were on in several of the windows in the buildings nearby, but the playground was deserted. Tengo's heart under the leather jacket beat out a slow but heavy rhythm. He rubbed his hands together repeatedly to see if they had normal sensation. Everything's fine, he told himself. I'm all set. Nothing to be afraid of. He made up his mind and started climbing up the ladder of the slide. Once on top, he sat down as he had before. The bottom of the slide was cold and slightly damp. With his hands in his pockets, he leaned against the railing and looked up at the sky. There were clouds of all sizes, several large ones, several small ones. Tengo squinted and looked for the moons, but at the moment they weren't visible, hidden behind the clouds. These weren't dense, heavy clouds, but rather smooth, white ones. Still, they were thick and substantial enough to hide the moons from his gaze. The clouds were gliding slowly from north to south. The wind didn't seem too strong. Or maybe the clouds were actually higher up than they looked. At any rate, they weren't in much of a hurry. Tengo glanced at his watch. The hands showed 7:03, ticking away the time ever more accurately. Still no Aomame. Tengo spent several minutes gazing at the hands of his watch as if they were something extraordinary. Then he shut his eyes. Like the clouds on the wind, he was in no hurry. If things took time, he didn't mind. He stopped thinking and gave himself over to the flow of time. At this moment, time's natural, even flow was the most important thing. With his eyes closed, he carefully listened to the sounds around him, as if searching for stations on a radio. He could hear the ceaseless hum of traffic on the expressway. It reminded him of the Pacific surf at the sanatorium in Chikura. A few seagull calls must have been mixed in as well. He could hear the intermittent beep as a large truck backed up, and a huge dog barking a short, sharp warning. Far away, someone was shouting out a person's name. He couldn't tell where all these sounds were coming from. With his eyes closed for this long, each and every sound lost its sense of direction and distance. The freezing wind swirled up from time to time, but he didn't feel the cold. Tengo had temporarily forgotten how to feel or react to all stimulations and sensations. He was suddenly aware of someone sitting beside him holding his right hand. Like a small creature seeking warmth, a hand slipped inside the pocket of his leather jacket and clasped his large hand. By the time he became fully aware, it had already happened.
Without any preface, the situation had jumped to the next stage. How strange, Tengo thought, his eyes still closed. How did this happen? At one point, time was flowing along so slowly that he could barely stand it. Then suddenly it had leapt ahead, skipping whatever lay between. This person held his big hand even tighter, as if to make sure he was really there. Long, smooth fingers with an underlying strength. Oh, mommy. But he didn't say it aloud. He didn't open his eyes. He just squeezed her hand in return. He remembered this hand. Never once in 20 years had he forgotten the feeling. Of course, it was no longer the tiny hand of a 10-year-old girl. Over the past 20 years, her hand had touched many things. It had clasped untold numbers of objects in every possible shape, and the strength within it had grown. Yet Tengo knew right away this was the very same hand. The way it squeezed his own hand and the feeling it was trying to convey were exactly the same. Inside him, 20 years dissolved and mixed into one complex, swirling whole. Everything that had accumulated over the years, all he had seen, all the words he had spoken, all the values he had held, all of it coalesced into one solid, thick pillar in his heart, the core of which was spinning like a potter's wheel. Wordlessly, Tengo observed the scene as if watching the destruction and rebirth of a planet. Aomami kept silent as well, the two of them on top of the freezing slide, wordlessly holding hands. Once again, they were a 10-year-old boy and girl. A lonely boy and a lonely girl. A classroom, just after school let out, at the beginning of winter. They had neither the power nor the knowledge to know what they should offer to each other, what they should be seeking. They had never, ever been truly loved, or truly loved someone else. They had never held anyone, never been held. They had no idea either where this action would take them. What they entered then was a doorless room. They couldn't get out, nor could anyone else come in. The two of them didn't know it at the time, but this was the only truly complete place in the entire world. Totally isolated, yet the one place not tainted with loneliness. How much time had passed? 5 minutes, perhaps. Or was it an hour? Or a whole day? Or maybe time had stood still. What did Tengo understand about time? He knew he could stay like this forever, the two of them silent on top of the slide, holding hands. He had felt that way at age 10, and now, 20 years on, he felt the same. He knew, too, that it would take time for him to acclimate himself to this new world that had come upon him. His entire way of thinking, his way of seeing things, the way he breathed, the way he moved his body, he would need to adjust and rethink every single element of life. And to do that, he needed to gather together all the time that existed in this world. No, maybe the whole world wouldn't be enough.
Tengo,
Aomami whispered, a voice neither low or high, a voice holding out a promise.
Open your eyes.
Tengo opened his eyes. Time began to flow again in the world.
There's the moon,
Aomami said.
Chapter 28. Ushikawa and a part of his soul. The fluorescent light on the ceiling shone down on Ushikawa's body. The heat was turned off, and a window was open, so the room was as freezing as an ice house. Several conference tables had been shoved together in the center of the room, and on top of them, Ushikawa lay face up. He had on winter long johns, and an old blanket was thrown on top of him. Under the blanket, his stomach was swollen like an anthill in a field. A small piece of cloth covered his questioning, opened eyes, eyes that no one had been able to close. His lips were slightly parted, lips from which no breath or words would ever slip out again. The crown of his head was flatter and more enigmatic-looking than it had been while he was alive. Thick, black, frizzy hair, reminiscent of pubic hair, shabbily surrounded that crown. Buzzcut had on a navy blue down jacket, while Ponytail was wearing a brown suede rancher's coat with a fur-trimmed collar. Both were slightly ill-fitting, as if they had hurriedly grabbed them from a limited supply of clothing that happened to be on hand. They were indoors, but their breath was white in the cold. The three of them were the sole occupants of the room, Buzzcut, Ponytail, and Ushikawa. There were three aluminum sash windows on one wall near the ceiling, and one of them was wide open to help keep the temperature down. Other than the tables with the body, there was no other furniture. It was an entirely bland, no-nonsense room. Placed there, even a corpse, even Ushikawa's, looked like a colorless, utilitarian object. No one was talking. The room was utterly devoid of sound. Buzzcut had a lot to ponder, and Ponytail never spoke anyway. Buzzcut was lost in thought, pacing back and forth in front of the table that held Ushikawa's body. Except for the moment when he reached the wall and had to turn around, his pace never slackened. His leather shoes were totally silent as they trod upon the cheap, light yellow-green carpeting. As usual, Ponytail staked out a spot near the door and stood there, motionless, legs slightly apart, back straight, staring off at an invisible point in space. He didn't seem tired or cold, not at all. The only evidence that he was still among the living was an occasional rapid burst of blinks and the measured white breath that left his mouth. Earlier that day, a number of people had gathered in that freezing room to discuss the situation. One of Sakigake's high-ranking members had been on a trip and it had taken a day to get everyone together. The meeting was secret, and they spoke in hushed tones so no one outside could hear. All this time, Ushikawa's corpse had lain there on the table, like a sample at an industrial machinery convention. Rigor mortis had set in on the corpse, and it would be another 3 days before that broke and the body was pliable again. Everyone shot the occasional quick glance at the body as they discussed several practical matters. While they were discussing things, there was no sense, even when the talk turned to the deceased, that they were paying respects to him or feeling regret for his passing. The stiff, stocky corpse simply reminded them of certain lessons and reconfirmed a few reflections on life, nothing more. Once time has passed, it can't be taken back. If death brings about any resolution, it's one that only applies to the deceased. Those sorts of lessons, those sorts of reflections. What should they do with Ushikawa's body? They knew the answer before they began. Ushikawa had died of unnatural causes, and if he were discovered, the police would launch an all-out investigation that would inevitably uncover his connection with Sakigake. They couldn't risk that. As soon as the rigor mortis was gone, they would secretly transport the corpse to the industrial-sized incinerator on the grounds of their compound and dispose of it. Soon, it would become nothing but black smoke and white ash. The smoke would be absorbed into the sky. The ash would spread on the fields as fertilizer for the vegetables. They had performed the same operation a number of times under Buzzcut's supervision. Leader's body had been too big, so they had handled it by using a chainsaw to cut it into pieces. There was no need to do so this time, for Ushikawa was nowhere near as big. Buzzcut was grateful for that. He didn't like any operations that got too gory. Whether it was dealing with the living or the dead, he preferred not to see any blood. His superior asked Buzzcut some questions. Who could have killed Ushikawa? And what was Ushikawa doing in that rented apartment in Koenji anyway? As head of security, Buzzcut had to respond, though he really didn't know the answers. Before dawn on Tuesday, he had gotten the call from that mysterious man, who was, of course, Tomaru, and learned that Ushikawa's body was in the apartment. Their conversation was at once practical and indirect. As soon as he hung up, Buzzcut immediately put out a call to a couple of followers in Tokyo. They changed into work uniforms, pretending to be movers, and headed out to the apartment in a Toyota Hiace van. Before they went inside, they made sure it wasn't a trap. They parked the van, and one of them scouted out the surroundings for anything suspicious. They needed to be very cautious. The police might be lying in wait, ready to arrest them as soon as they set foot in the place, something